And it's too easy to approach everything that we do like that, that we sort of pick up the main words, or the main bits, and what goes on in between, we just sort of gloss over, and we miss out on what is in between. Or it's too easy in your doing your reading just to gloss over the whole thing. And you think you know about it, and you forget to look properly. And it's taking the scriptures and trying to bring out the extra bits that are there that we study for a start, and that we have weekends such as this and try to bring out lessons which are behind the more obvious parts. And I hope that what we're going to do between us, Trevor and myself, this weekend will help you to look at the bits in between and to see that there's an awful lot there, and that it is a lifetime study, and even now we feel that we're desperately short of full understanding. There's so much there. We're going to try and give a brief introduction in this first talk of letting you sort of get an overall picture of Timothy, of what he did, of the way he went around with Paul and without him, and preached, that he was a preacher in the same way that Paul was, that he expounded and didn't just sort of just back up Paul. And then to take an overview of these two letters to Timothy and to see what the general message is. And so that's our first talk before we home in on particular subjects in the following talks. Now, you need your finger or a marker in Timothy and in Acts for this. Acts chapter 16 is the section that we're going to start with there. But first, if we can take Timothy and just note this title that we have of my own son in the faith. That's he uses that term four or five times. We read it twice, actually, in the opening chapter there in 1 Timothy. And the second verse, unto Timothy, my own son in the faith. At the end of the chapter, at verse 18, this charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy. Chapter 2, sorry, 2 Timothy. And chapter 1, at verse 2, again addressing Timothy, to Timothy, my dearly beloved son. Chapter 2, verse 1, thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And there does seem to be a tremendous sympathy of closeness between Timothy and Paul. And that Paul has this feeling for him of a son, which comes out time and again. And you get this very special care that Paul seems to give to Timothy in particular. And that's why these letters to Timothy and Titus are called pastoral letters, of giving particular care to the individual and the work that he and Titus were undertaking. As we're in 2 Timothy chapter 1, you see his background a little bit in verse 5, or verse 4 we'll take. Greatly desiring to see thee, being mindful of thy tears, that I may be filled with joy. And you get the feeling that Timothy is desperate to see Paul and to get encouragement and strength from him from that verse. When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded that in thee also. That's again a lovely little couplet of unfeigned faith. There was nothing showy, nothing artificial about this faith that first was in your grandmother and then in your mother, and now I'm sure it's in you too. That there's something pure and direct and simple about the faith that you had, that you have this unfeigned faith, and it's come down through your family, and it's been a tremendous assistance to you. In chapter 3, he talks about from a child you've known the Holy Scriptures. And obviously the influence of family there had been enormous in enabling Timothy to pick up and to set out on the path of being the disciple with Paul. And that came first from his grandmother and then from his mother, and passed on then to himself. Now, you get no mention of the father in here, and it would appear that he has departed in some ways, either left or he has died. If you are now in Acts and chapter 16, you'll see that his father was not a Jew, so he came from a mixed marriage. And here we have Paul on his second missionary journey, coming to Derbe and Lystra, and it would appear that Lystra is the home of Timothy. Lystra being right in the middle of Asia Minor, Turkey as we would call it today. So Paul comes to Lystra and Derbe, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, the son of a certain woman, which was a Jewess and believed. But his father was a Greek, which was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters, for they knew all that his father was a Greek. And they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees to keep that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. So Paul has come from Jerusalem, he's been at the council of the elders, which is in chapter 15, and he's delivering the decrees to the ecclesias that they had agreed upon, and he comes to Lystra, and he finds this particular disciple, Timothy, who was well reported of. And he wishes to take him with him. Now clearly Timothy was already a believer, his family were already believers. Whether they'd been converted when Paul first came to Derbe and Lystra, and the problems that Paul had then of being stoned and left for dead, and it's referred to in 2 Timothy 3, where he says, "You've fully known the persecutions that came to me in these places." Or whether perhaps Timothy, through his grandmother and mother, had heard at, well, not Timothy himself, but his grandmother and mother, through Pentecost or something like that, that there had been some previous influence, it appears that Timothy by this time is well established as a good disciple. Now we're talking here about 20 years after Christ, AD 50, 51. And it seems that Timothy is around the age of 20. So he's around the age of the majority of you, if not me, unfortunately. So he's a young man who sets out from home with Paul. And all that we read about him goes through for the next, well, 20 years at the most. So even by the end of Timothy, when Paul writes the second epistle to him, Paul's last letter, he's only 40-ish, which is a bit nearer me. So he has taken on and accomplished an incredible amount as a young man. And he started at your age, went out and accomplished these things from the age of about 20. It's interesting that Paul, in verse 3, we're told, circumcised him, because that's what the argument at Jerusalem had been about, as to whether you stay with the old requirements of the law, and in particular with circumcision. And they decided, no, you don't have to. There are only these other four things that were required, and those were delivered, but circumcision was not. I find that interesting, just from the point of view that having taken Timothy, who could have been circumcised because he was counted as a Jew, being the son of a Jewish woman, Paul doesn't sort of flaunt him as a test case. He could have said, "We've decided circumcision isn't necessary, and here is my test case, I'm going to show you, you don't have to do it." He doesn't. He doesn't sort of make that statement and provoke opposition. It's as if here he says, now is the time for quietly getting on with the job, the important things. And I think that there's a little lesson there for us in that there are times when it's best just to be quiet and in the background and not flaunting the fact that we disagree with something, even though we don't think it's vital or we do think it's vital. Paul seems to take the point here of getting on with the job of the preaching and the deliverance of the things which they did consider to be critical. On another occasion with Titus, he goes the other way and refuses that Titus should be circumcised. But then he was not a Jew. So they set out, as we're told in verse 4 there, to deliver the decrees to the various cities. And they go right through Turkey until they come to Troas. And Troas is on the, what do you call it, the Aegean Sea, over by Istanbul, as we now know it. And it's there that, you remember that little phrase, come over into Macedonia and help us, verse 9. And so the call comes now to go over the Dardanelles, over into Greece. And from there, the journeys really started. And they go off first into Philippi. It's there that Paul and Silas are put in prison. Luke, who seems to be with them, and Timothy were not. It's there that they sang hymns at midnight and that they were released by the miraculous intervention of the Lord. He goes on from there into Thessalonica and then Berea and then back, it would seem, to Thessalonica. And you end up with a tremendous catalogue of where Paul went, where Timothy went, and often in the company of Paul. When he goes back to Thessalonica, we're told in that letter that he went as a special envoy, that Silas isn't mentioned. He could have sent Silas, but he sends Timothy. And as a young man, he is sent off on his own to inquire of the state of the people there. And he accomplishes that on Paul's behalf. What I've done actually is to prepare an overhead which tries to put together the journeys of Timothy. Having done it, it's quite a mess because he goes so far. They don't know exactly where he went. And there is a certain amount of conjecture about this. I can't even get it all on the screen, look at that. Right. We start off from Lystra. This is Turkey. The black is the background of the land, and this is Turkey, Greece, and Italy. And you get an approximate idea of the time period by seeing the figures I put there. AD 51, when Timothy is about 20, he sets off from Lystra and he comes to Troas here and then up to Philippi. He spends a lot of time going backwards and forth in Greece and Macedonia and to Corinth, and spends a lot of the time that Paul was there. Remember, he was there for 18 months. It would seem that Timothy was there much of that time also. Whether he then went off with Paul and returned to Jerusalem, we don't know. You get the feeling that he did, because the language doesn't suggest that he stayed at Ephesus or Corinth. But you can't be sure on that way. And then sets off perhaps again with Paul through Antioch and back up to Lystra and across to Ephesus on the third journey, now in the ground, by AD 54. And he then picks up, having stayed a period in Ephesus, he goes off again on his travels, sent on this time by Paul himself in about 57. He and a chap called Erastus, brother Erastus, go off at Paul's request into Macedonia, and again they travel around backwards and forth, and it's difficult to know exactly where they went, but they end up possibly returning again with Paul from Ephesus to Jerusalem. And it's there that Paul is imprisoned. We don't know what happened to Timothy during that period, but Paul goes off to Rome in
about 62, when after he'd been captive in Caesarea for 2 years. And at some stage we find that Timothy is in Rome with Paul. And Paul sent him out to the Philippians. And so that's the purple line over the top. I'd like to look at Philippians,
if you will, because there's a lovely little description of Timothy. Philippians chapter 2. And we start at verse 19. This is Paul writing from Rome when he was in chains, in prison. I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timotheus shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. And here's this lovely description of him. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. The word like-minded in my margin at least has got so dear unto me. And so you have again this togetherness, this closeness that Paul and Timothy seem to share. So he's so dear to Paul, and no man who will naturally care for your state. And so you get the feeling here of a man of feeling, of sympathy, who will naturally care for your state. I don't know about you, but I find I'm much more natural in caring for myself than for other people. And here we have a description of Timothy who is much more concerned that he will naturally care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's. As if he's saying, that's not so with Timothy. This is a man who will seek the things which are Jesus Christ's. But you know the proof of him, that as a son with the Father, he has served with me in the gospel. And so you get here this feeling that he has been with Paul on many occasions and in many of his travels. And that's why I've suggested that he has shared in much of those journeys. Him, therefore, I hope to send presently as soon as I shall see how it will go with me. And so, an envoy is sent out from Rome by Paul, and he has no one who could possibly fill the role better than Timothy himself. Let's just leave that there for a minute while we conclude the journey, where ultimately, and we don't know the route by which it happened, Timothy ends up, it would seem, in Ephesus. It's always thought that he was the bishop or the leader of the church in Ephesus. That's by tradition as much as by scripture. But he ends up in Ephesus. Paul had been released before this and spent some time travelling around. And he goes, we're told in Timothy, if we just look in 1 Timothy this time, and chapter 1, verse 3. I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went into Macedonia, that thou mightest charge some that they teach no other doctrine. So you've got Paul going off from Ephesus, leaving Timothy behind, while Paul goes into Macedonia. There's only one other passage that I want to take in this section, and that's at the end of Hebrews, and that's Hebrews chapter 13, where we find that Timothy had suffered imprisonment as well for his beliefs and for his work. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 23. Know ye that our brother Timothy is set at liberty, with whom, if he comes shortly, I will see you. So again, the togetherness, the company of the two, but Timothy has been set at liberty, and so if this was referring to Paul from Rome, it may well be that Timothy had been imprisoned there. But at some point, at least, he had been imprisoned because of his beliefs, but was now set free. Now, if Timothy does end up as the bishop or the leader of the ecclesia at Ephesus, the last interesting point is whether he was the angel of the church of Ephesus that the letters in Revelation were addressed to. It's possible. Now, there are a number of letters that Paul writes that have Timothy as co-author. We think of the letters as being the letters of Paul to so-and-so, but on many occasions we find that they're the letters from Paul and Timothy. Second letter is Corinthians there, an apostle of Jesus Christ, Paul, and Timothy, our brother. Philippians, Paul and Timothy, the servants of Jesus Christ. And Colossians, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and Timothy, our brother. More. Thessalonians, book, letters there. Remember, Paul, Timothy had gone there first off as Paul's special envoy, and both letters used him in the title that he was co-author with Paul. Paul, Silas, and Timothy for the church there. Paul, Silas, and Timothy, again, with a second letter. And finally, in Philemon, Paul, a prisoner of Jesus Christ, and Timothy, our brother. So what you have there is clearly a very active man, one who was involved very much with Paul in all his travels and all his difficulties in journeys and preaching, and and for instance, it refers to Timothy preaching, teaching with Paul, that he was party to all that went on. And a man who had particular care and sympathy with those that he sought to help. Now we come to a very brief synopsis of the letters. I suppose if I would just say, having looked at these over the past few weeks, what are the things that stand out to me from reading the two letters? I suppose that you must think of the emphasis on doctrine and teaching. But that doctrine and teaching is not just talking about the creed, the statements of faith. I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that he isn't God, and that sort of pure teaching in the head knowledge. But what he's trying to get across is not just that that is critical, but the life that comes out of it is fundamental with it. And the two are just indistinguishable. And that is one of the main things that he's trying to get across in both these letters. And that comes out time and again, as I think you'll see. Another thing in the first letter is very much organisation. That he's saying that if I don't get to you, I'd like to know how to behave. And so he's talking about various aspects of organisation in the ecclesia. The second letter is a little different in that, as I said, it's Paul's last letter. And he knows that it's going to be the end for him very shortly. And if you can imagine, right, you've got one last letter to write. It would be full of, do this, please, look after that, care about this. And you'd have so much expectation you'd want to get across. I think that's how the second letter is written. It's not sort of, right, this is the organisation and all the rest of it. It's not even harking back to the Old Testament and saying these are ways you should understand. But it's exhortation of a personal nature, of one man to his son. And the care comes through again in the reading of the second letter. So what I've done here is just to take the directives, the points where Paul, in writing in each chapter, sort of gives direction
as to do this. These are the authoritative statements. Right, teach no other doctrine. And that comes out in the first chapter, and we'll be developing that a little later. In the second chapter he says, exhort people to pray for all. But it's not just a case of a blinkered society, but you're dependent on so many things, and so thanks should be given for all. Because God would, that all should be saved. That when you've learned for a proof, no doubt, verse 4 in chapter 2, God who will have all men to be saved, to come to a knowledge of the truth. That's what he wants. He then goes into the organisation of men and women within the ecclesia, of bishops and deacons, those who take authority within the ecclesia. If I tarry long, that you may know how to behave. And so that's what he's trying to set out, that if I don't get to see you, this is how you, as a leader of the ecclesia, should order matters. Chapter 4 then goes into a very different type of exhortation type chapter. Again, a sense of doctrine comes out in the early part of it, that you should remind the brethren about these things and teach and command these things. And then direct exhortation. Give attendance to. Concentrate on these things. Don't neglect. Meditate on. Give yourself wholly to these things. Take heed to yourself. And continue in the things that I'm trying to get across to you. In chapter 5, he goes on with more direction about organisation. And here he's talking about the widows and the elders, about servants and masters, he starts in chapter 6. And then he concludes with this little section then about personal exhortation again. And exhortation about how we should look upon riches, for instance. In the second letter, we don't have the organisational side, but we have a good deal of the exhortational side. And so he says, stir up the gift that is in you. Could have been ignored. Don't let it be. Don't be ashamed. Be partaker. Involve yourself in these things. Hold fast. Keep good hold on. Have the form of sound words, the good teaching. And keep the good thing that is in you. Chapter 2, again, many spread directives. Be strong. Endure. Consider. Remember. Study. Avoid, shun. Flee away from that which is evil and follow that which is good. Avoid. And so you see a man trying to get Timothy to stay in the right paths. And finally, chapter 3, a list of things to avoid. Turn away, have nothing to do with them, but continue in the good things. And his final word, right, this is what's leading up to, I've finished my course, I've done all that is asked of me, and therefore there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. I want you to be the same, he said. So preach, be instant, reprove, rebuke, exhort, watch, work, fulfill. And you can see the abundance of words are flowing out from Paul now as he seeks to direct Timothy in the way that he should go.
That, I think, has given a very brief synopsis, and I hope this will be a base on which now we can build. My final verse is in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and at verse 6. We've already referred to it. It's this word, stir up the gift of God which is in you. Now that word for stir up is to rekindle. Which is what I've just done to this candle. Unfortunately, being light outside, it doesn't work quite so well, this. But there you have a flame. There it's gone. Puff of wind, and it disappears. That gift, even though it was in Paul, through the laying on of Paul's hands and of the presbytery, he says, could be ignored. It had to be stirred up and rekindled. It had to glow. It had to give light in dark places. When Jesus was teaching, he referred to John the Baptist as a light. And you are willing for a season to come and rejoice in his light. You could come close to John and you could see. But then you went away again and you were in darkness. And what he said is, I want you to catch fire also. So that when you go away, you're a light as well. And the flame is burning. And wherever you go, you'll be able to see, and others will come up to you. And they too will catch fire. They'll be a light. The gift won't be ignored, and it won't go out. It's going to burn brightly in you, just like Paul was keen that it should do in Timothy.